Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 6, chapter entitled Creation of the Universal Form, text number 39. Text number 39. Ato Bhagavato Maya. Mayinam api mohini. Yat swayam chatma vatmatma na veda kim utapare. Ato, therefore, and Bhagavata, godly, maya, potencies, mayinam, of the jugglers, api, even. Mohini, enchanting. Yat, that which. Swayam, personally. Cha, also. Atmavartma, self-sufficient. Atma, self. Na, does not. Veda, no. Kim, what? Uta, to speak of. Apare, others. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The wonderful potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is bewildering even to the jugglers. That potential power is unknown even to the self-sufficient Lord, so is certainly unknown to others. Translation responsibly. The wonderful potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is bewildering even to the jugglers. That potential power is unknown even to the self-sufficient Lord. So it is certainly unknown to others. Purport. The froggish philosophers and mundane wranglers in science and mathematical calculation cannot believe in the inconceivable potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but they are sometimes puzzled by the wonderful jugglery of man and nature. Such jugglers and magicians of the mundane world are actually puzzled by the jugglery of the Lord in His transcendental activities. But they try to adjust their bewilderment by saying that it is all mythology. There is, however, nothing impossible or mythological in the Supreme Omnipotent Person. The most wonderful puzzle for the mundane wranglers is that while they remain calculating the length and breadth of the unlimited potency of the Supreme Person, His faithful followers are set free from the bondage of material engagement simply by appreciating the wonderful jugglery of the Supreme in the practical field. The devotees of the Lord see the wonderful dexterity in everything with which they come in contact in all circumstances of eating, sleeping, working, etc. A small banyan fruit contains thousands of small seeds, and each seed holds the potency of another tree, which again holds the potency of many millions of such fruits as causes and effects. So the trees and seeds engage the devotees in meditation about the activities of the Lord, while the mundane wranglers waste time in dry speculation and mental concoction, which are fruitless in both this life and the next. In spite of their pride and speculation, they can never appreciate the simple potential activities of the banyan tree. Such speculators are poor souls destined to remain in matter perpetually. Omagyana timanandasya gunanjana shalakaya chakshurun militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapatantikam Pancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So what is this chapter called? Creation of the Universal Form. So the universal form, the universal form, Prabhupada explains, is an imaginary form. It doesn't actually exist. But it's a way that, Prabhupada explains, neophyte people can perceive God within creation. You can imagine that the hairs on the body of the Lord are the trees. You can meditate like that. Or the ocean, which is just behind us, that is the navel. Or the water, which is within the navel of the Lord. So these are imaginary things. Not that it's not actually a universal form, but it's something which you impose. It is said to be the first step in God realization. In other words, if you're beginning to become interested in God, this is the first way to meditate on God. But it's not, you can't reciprocate with the universal form. And Prabhupada said, how do you make a garland for the universal form? It means you need all the flowers in the universe. And you have to go all the way around, you know, from Satya Loka down to, you know, Patala Loka. You have to make a garland and then put it there. And then you have to do the arti. And then you have to cook the bhoga. It's like, it's too difficult. So it's just it's an imagination. No? But at least it's the first step in God realization. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, 16th chapter, what is the 16th chapter called? Divine and demoniac natures. So in this world, there are two classes of people, basically. Either you believe in God or you do not. Sura and Asura. You are theist or you are atheist. That's basically what divides everyone, basically. So for an atheist to at least see, okay, there's God within this universal system, then that's a step in the right direction. So Prabhupada says, first step in God realization. But it's not advanced realization, but this is the beginning. So, this is the third canto of the Bhagavatam. And in one sense, it's one of the most technical parts of the Bhagavatam. What is about to be described, or what are we hearing about now? Creation. Who is the conversation between? Yeah. Maitreya and Vidura. Who was with Krishna when Krishna left this world? Uddhava and Maitreya. Because you're here in the final, the 11th canto, you'll hear there is a conversation which is called Uddhava Gita. So Krishna is speaking to Uddhava. Because Uddhava was living in Dwarka with Krishna. And Dwarka began to crumble. Inauspicious signs. You know, you see when, you know, huge rocks from the mandirs, from the temples, from the palaces, they were falling to the ground. Very inauspicious. Right? So Uddhava, he looked around, he said, this could not be happening, because Krishna is here. There's nothing inauspicious when Krishna is there. He said, this could not be happening. These are signs. The Lord is about to depart. So Uddhava went to Krishna and he said, now you're about to go. So please, I want to go with you. I don't want to stay. If you're not going to be here, I want to leave also. But then Krishna said to him, I need you to stay. Because there's some more service that you need to do. I did not go, while I was on the earth, I did not go to Badrik Ashram. Badrik Ashram is in the Himalaya. No. So Krishna did not have an opportunity. But there were sages there in Badrik Ashram who wanted to hear from Krishna. So then he instructed Uddhava, and he said to Uddhava, you go to Badrik Ashram, and you instruct them. And that was the Uddhava Gita. So Krishna spoke the Uddhava Gita, then Uddhava left. He began to travel towards Badrik Ashram. So then Krishna, he went to Prabhas Chetra. They had the fratricidal war. Everyone destroyed each other. The Yadu dynasty disappeared. apparently. And then Krishna sat down under a small banyan tree, and Uddhava came back, because Uddhava heard he went, he was going towards Badrikashram, and then someone said they've all gone to Prabhas, so he turned around, he came back, and then they sat down and they spoke one more time. And then Krishna spoke, what is here? This is what we're about to hear now. This third canto, this talk between Maitreya and Vidura, this is the conversation that Krishna had when he finally left. So then Maitreya, he was sitting on the side. Krishna and Uddhava were sitting, looking at each other, and Maitreya sat next to them, and he heard the entire conversation. And then at the end, when the conversation was finished between Krishna and Uddhava, then Uddhava went to Himalaya, to Badrikashram. Maitreya began to travel. And then Vidura, we know the story, that Vidura was traveling on pilgrimage because he was kicked out of the palace by Duryodhana, like that. So then he was traveling. So then he met Uddhava, and he said to Uddhava, please instruct me everything that you heard from Krishna before he left this world. And then what did Uddhava say?
You better go to Maitreya.
Yeah, go and see Maitreya, who was also close by. Why did he say that?
He's
senior. He's senior, yeah. So you don't instruct when there's a senior person there. Unless the senior person asks you to speak, you don't speak. You know, if Devan Rita Swami is here, you don't start like, you know, you know, if he's there and, you know, there's a new devotee, you know, you say, Maharaj, he's a new devotee, you know, and Maharaj begins to preach to him, and then you, when Maharaj says, and yeah, and then I wanted to tell you this as well, like, you don't cut in, because the senior person is speaking. So Uddhava, even though he's more advanced than Maitreya, he's an eternal associate of Krishna, but he said, you go and hear from Maitreya. So then if we look at the third canto, it's one of the most technical parts of the Bhagavatam, along with the 11th canto. Then what are we about to hear about, or what are we hearing about now? What is the subject?
How the universe came to be.
What's that?
How the universe came to be.
Yeah, yeah, so it's the creation, right? And how many times do we hear it in the third canto? How many times is it discussed? Yeah, Loka Pillow at the end. It's discussed three times in detail. When I was teaching the third canto a few years ago in our Bhakti Bhai Bhav course, the devotees really struggled, especially the Mataji's, with the third canto. Because it's just philosophy and philosophy and philosophy. And then they explain the entire creation once, and then again, three times. And devotees said to me, can't we just go to the fourth canto? Start hearing some pastimes, some lila and like that. It's very technical. It's very technical. Now, Jiva Goswami, he explains, why do we need to hear it? Why do we need to hear about the creation? Why don't we just skip over it now? Okay, third canto, it's too intense. Let's just go to the fourth canto and start hearing about Dhruva Maharaj. So why do we need to hear it?
To understand the unlimited potency of the Lord to create and not create. That can set us up for his other lilas.
That's good. That's nice. Okay. Any other points? Jiva Goswami makes a particular point. Why is it that we need to hear the creation? Because it's in here. It's very... You have to study the Bhagavatam systematically. Prabhupada has said that in the introduction. He said you have to go from Canto 1 to Canto 12 systematically. Prabhupada says, devotees said, you know, do we have to study your books from beginning to end? Prabhupada said, you can take an apple and you can bite it on this side or that side. It's still as sweet. Doesn't matter where you bite it. So you can read any of Prabhupada's books. You can pick up Krishna book, and then you can walk over and pick up Charitamrita. It's all sweet. But Prabhupada said at some point, we need to study his books systematically, from beginning to end. There's a chronology, or there's a reason why the Bhagavatam is spoken in the order that it is spoken. So we can't avoid, if you're going to study it seriously, you can't avoid the creation. So why do we study it? To know how we're in mind, yeah, that's it. That's basically the answer. Then Prabhupada explains, or Jiva Goswami explains, to differentiate between matter and spirit. Right? Because in Kapila's teachings and all of these teachings of the creation, we're analyzing matter very deeply. 26 elements, right, of material nature. Right? 5 working senses, 5 knowledge acquiring senses, the 5 Mahabhutas, that's 15. Then, Mind, intelligence, and false ego. That's 18. Then? The sense objects. Right? That's 23. Then? The living entity. Yeah. Then? Maya, mahatattva, or the sum total of all of it together. Right? And then? No, not time, but the super soul. They're the 26 elements. So we have to understand. So what are we? What are you? Who are you? Right? What is the definition of Maya?
That which you are not.
That which you are not. So what do we think at the moment?
We are those 26 elements.
Yeah, or 24.
Yeah.
If you're number 26, you've got a problem. Then you should become in the class more often. If you think you are the super soul, yeah, you need to come to class a lot. Don't miss the Bhagavad Time class. I am number 26. I am super soul. What time is breakfast? Sorry. I am super soul. Super soul. Yeah. Okay, so we're not number 26. Hands up if you're not number 26. Okay, I've got one person who is. It's okay. Okay, so we are number 26. Okay, so we are number 25. We know that theoretically, we know that, don't we? Prabhupada said our knowledge is theoretical. He says at least theoretically understand. If you look at most of Prabhupada's classes when he was on the planet, a lot of it's dealing with you are not the body, you are the soul. Right? Because we need, but for us it's theoretical. For Prabhupada it was realized, it was vigyan. Prabhupada knew he was not the body. We don't know that. That is called maya, that which is not. Right? We've heard this class 1,000 times. Right? We've heard that we are not the body. Theoretically we understand it, we accept it, but we don't act on it at all. Right? As soon as a girl walks past, or as soon as a boy walks past for a girl, then you look, oh, wait a minute, I'm a brahmachari, I can't look. Like that, so. And Prabhupada says in the seventh canto, the mind is the most opulent bedstead. You may externally, you may be acting like, oh, I'm blocking out all the sense, but in the mind, what are you thinking about? Krishna says, third chapter of Gita, michacha, a pretender. Right? Externally, oh yeah, I'm renounced, but internally, if you're thinking, Hiranya, Kashipu, golden beds, then that is not real. So that is Maya. Maya is outside, but Maya is also in here. Right? And it's more difficult to get rid of it in here than it is outside. Externally, you can do all the external. That's not so difficult. I mean, it's difficult in Kali Yuga, but it's more difficult to internally to purify the chitta, buddha shuddhi, to make the consciousness pure. That's why before we begin deity worship, we do buddha shuddhi. You know, devotees chant these mantras. Gopi bhatu bhada kamaliyo dasa dasana. You know, I'm not a brahmin, I'm not a kshatriya. But are you really meditating on that? Buddha shuddhi means we should approach the Lord in our spiritual form. Give up your maya form, your maya attachment. And before we chant the maha mantra, right, we should do buddha shuddhi. Sachinandan Swami teaches us this in all of his japa or holy name retreats. I've done many retreats with Maharaj. He says you have to do buddha shuddhi before you begin to chant your japa. Purify your consciousness. You don't just pick up your beads. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. No, but first, purify the consciousness. Meditate on pancha tattva. Some devotees chant pancha tattva mantra 108 times before they chant maha mantra. Right? Meditating. Identifying themselves as servants of the pancha tattva. Then you begin to chant maha mantra. So you need to purify your consciousness. So the Bhagavad Time is teaching us, why do we study this whole subject of creation? Because you need to understand the difference between matter and spirit. Right? This is called, what are Kapila's teachings called? Sambandhagyana. What do we call his teachings? Sankhya Yoga. What is Sankhya?
Counting,
yeah. Or analysis. Right? We're analyzing. Right? This is called Jnana. Jnana Yoga. Sometimes we hear there's Jnana Yoga, Karma Yoga, Bhakti. What is Jnana Yoga? It means to analyze. Right? Sankhya means to analyze. What am I? Okay, what's the first one? Earth. Are you earth? He'd say, no, but we think we are. Are we water? Are we fire? Are we air? Are we ether? When you put it together, yeah, that's what I am. That's what I think. Right? I identify with this body. Hands up if you're attached to your material body. Hands up if you're attached to the bodies of others. Maya. It's illusion. No, but we are. We're attached. Right? Just like you get a puppy dog. You see this all the time. People have pets. Right? You get a puppy dog. You put two puppy dogs together. Right? Now, what is the definition of Maya? Aham mameti. I am this body. This is my dog. So you get two puppy dogs, right? This puppy dog dies and this puppy dog lives. If that puppy dog dies, they become lost. You know, so much emotion. So I know people have lost their dogs. They can't live practically. Oh, Scooby-Doo. Oh. Yeah, I lost my dog. You know, but then another dog, you put another dog right next to that dog who's alive, and there's no emotional attachment whatsoever. That dog dies, they go, oh, well, the dog died. But then this dog, because it's my false ego, is attached to that dog, ahammamet, it is my dog, then we cry and cry so much. This is maya, illusion. But all of us are like that. We're attached to our body, we're attached to other bodies. That is called illusion. So that's what Sankhya is about. It's about analyzing and understanding the difference. Right? Bhagavad Gita has three divisions. Right? First six chapters are called Karma Yoga. Right? The last six, particularly, the last six, 13 to 18, they're called Jnana Yoga. So Jnana means Sankhya, really. And if you go to the second chapter, when Krishna is giving second chapter an overview, contents of the Gita summarized, right? In verse, is about 39, Krishna mentions Sankhya, right? He's talking about analyzing. And if you look at verses 11 to 30 of the second chapter, it is all Jnana. It is Sankhya. He's analyzing the difference between matter and spirit. And then Jnana Yoga, which is the final part of the Gita, what does he spend most of the time analyzing? Has anyone heard of the Bhagavad Gita? Yeah, he says that. But what if you really, if you read the last six chapters, particularly the last six, what is it that Krishna spends most? Because it's jnana, knowledge, right? What does he spend most of the time, or what is emphasized most in those last six chapters?
Consciousness.
Very good. Yeah, the three gunas, the modes, right? If you look at chapter 13, now what is chapter 13 called?
Nature enjoying
content. Then 14? Right, 3 modes. So if you look at chapter 14, which is called the three modes, it's mainly about divisions of the modes, right? Chapter 15? Yeah, it becomes very analytical, right? And then 16? Divine and demoniac. So that's more or less an analysis of the modes. You know, divine, sattva qualities, and then Krishna says, and then you have the demoniac, the lower qualities, born from passion, born from tamas, right? And then 17 is divisions of fate. And he really analyzes once again. He gives you so many divisions. Foods, right? Sattva, rajas, tamas, like that. And then behavior, charity. He gives all the different analysis. And then when you get to 18, he does it again. Yeah, perfection of renunciation. So he does it again. So most of what he's talking about in terms of jnana is the three modes of nature. Now why is it, if Krishna has only got 700 verses, more or less, even though there is more spoken. Why is it that he concentrates so much on the modes in the jnana section of the Bhagavad Gita? Because he could speak about many things in those final chapters. Why does he put so much emphasis on the gunas? Yeah, very good. He says that in the beginning of chapter 14. Yeah. This science is superior. He says that. This is the superior science. You can become liberated if you become free from the gunas. Yeah, same point. So, in other words, we are deeply affected by the modes of material nature. I remember when I was a new devotee, I went to Vrindavan for the first time and I was sitting next to my spiritual master. He was giving a class. And he said, we have to understand when we are being affected by the modes of material nature. And I was sitting there listening to him. I couldn't even understand what he was saying. I know. I remember going back to that point. He was saying, you have to understand when you are affected. And I was just thinking, what does that mean? Yeah, in other words, I'm always affected. I was so in the modes of mature age, I didn't even understand what it... You have to understand when you're affected. I'm thinking, when am I affected? It's like, I'm always affected. You know, Giriraj Maharaj was walking down the beach in Juhu with Prabhupada. Right? They were on a morning walk and Prabhupada had his cane. And Giriraj Maharaj was speaking to Prabhupada and he said, I'm sorry, Prabhupada. He said, sometimes I get into Maya. And Prabhupada stopped and he put his cane into the ground. He said, you are always in Maya. And he kept walking. Giriraj Maharaj says, yeah, imagine Prabhupada saying that to you, looking at you. You are always in Maya. And Giriraj Maharaj, he just pays obeisances on the beach. Prabhupada just walked off. He just offered his obeisances and then he ran after Prabhupada. Sri Guru, Guru Mukha Padma Vakya. The words from the lotus mouth of the spiritual master. Sri Guru Charana Rati. We have to hold on to the lotus feet of our guru. Why? Because we haven't got any other hope. None of us are going to go back to Godhead unless we're holding on to someone else. Just like one of my god sisters passed away about 10 years ago, I think it was. And the pavitras that we wear, you know, the pavitras we get from Mayapur, they're offered to Nisringadev or like that. So my Guru Maharaj had one, a pavitra he used to wear quite often, nice, big, thick, saffron one. And when he passed away from this world, one of my godbrothers, he took that. He kept it because he was dividing his possessions up. So he kept the pavitra. And then when my god sister was passing away, he put it on her. So in the final week, she was wearing it. And she was just holding it all the time while she was chanting, just holding it tightly while she was chanting. In other words, you have to hold on to your guru. If you want to go back to Krishna, none of us will get back to Krishna. That's not possible. I'm not going to get back. That's not possible. If I hold on to my guru, who's holding on to Prabhupada, yeah, then good chance. Maybe they'll say, you know, my Prabhupada will look down and say, who's that guy behind you? Who's that guy? Oh, it's Keshava. Okay. Keshava. Mm. Okay, maybe. But that's your chance. You'll get in if you're holding on, but otherwise not possible. So we are influenced and controlled practically by the three modes of material nature. Right? Now, if you analyze, around about 15 years ago, I deeply studied those last chapters of the Gita. Like, I looked at it very, very, very carefully, analyzed it very carefully, studying under Burajan Prabhu through his lectures, and I analyzed it very carefully. And Krishna himself, this is God himself who is speaking, right? He very much favors sattva gun. Right? Very much encouraged. Devotees have to understand this point. And it is substantiated because sometimes devotees say, no, bhakti, sudha sattva. But you have to understand the teachings in entirety. It is very important for devotees to be situated in sattva gun while performing their bhakti. There's many quotes from Prabhupada, from the Bhagavatam, from the Upadeshamrita, which substantiate this. Right? Prabhupada says, mode of goodness is a springboard to pure goodness. Pure goodness is what the spiritual world is constituted of. In the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, one of the acharyas, there's about 20 commentaries on the Bhagavatam. It's one of the less known commentaries. I can't remember the name of the acharya. But he says, when you look at the two modes, Shuddha Sattva, pure goodness, and Sattva Gun, he said they look very similar. If you see someone in this world who is a gentleman, right? One time a reporter said to Prabhupada, how do I understand who is your disciple? What did Prabhupada say? Prabhupada said, he's the guy who's down the street there in the mall jumping off the seat in the Harinam. Is that how you recognize one of Prabhupada's followers? No, Prabhupada said he's a perfect gentlemen, right? That is how we understand who is the devotee. Right? The devotees are perfect gentlemen. When people meet us, they should be very impressed. Perfect lady, perfect gentleman. They think the Hare Krishnas are wonderful. They are effulgent. They are clean. Prabhupada said we should have a revolution in cleanliness. Perfect behavior. I read the other day, you know, the calendar? Every morning we tip over the calendar. We have those little calendars. The one I've got at my house, my ashram, is that I looked it over, it was a couple of days ago, and Prabhupada said, a devotee has ideal character. Ideal. Prabhupada said, nidosha is one of the 26 qualities of the devotee. A devotee has no fault. Right? So what does that mean? We're not devotees. I read that. You know, every morning, I get up in the morning, I pack up my bed and put it away, and then I lift over the calendar, and I'm just waiting, what's Prabhupada going to say today? You know, Prabhupada's holding the mace. You know, and I lift over the calendar and goes, boom. And some mornings he hits me with a lotus flower and just touches me on the head, but most mornings it's just, ka-ka-poom. So, I say, okay, Prabhupada, what is it today? I lifted it, and he said, a devotee has ideal character. He has no fault. So what does that mean? It means I'm not a devotee. By definition, we are Vaishnav Abhas. Shadow of a devotee, yeah. We look like a devotee. Externally, we have all the... At least we put on the right clothes. Right? At least we put on the right tilak. At least we have Kanti Mala, and we hold Japa Mala. So at least that's good, because we're doing the right thing. But we're not devotee. We're following the devotees, but we're not the devotee. What's that? Yeah, practicing. It's sadhana. We're practicing. But we're going there. Imitation of a good thing is good. That's the point. Okay, don't think you're a devotee, but at least you're imitating the devotee. That is good. You're following the devotee. That is good. So, when you analyze the two modes, mode of goodness and the mode of pure goodness, they are very similar. Now, if you look in the... sometimes devotees, they de-emphasize the mode of goodness. But Prabhupada says in the Upadeshamrita, in the introduction, the nectar of instruction, what does he say? Very, very interesting what he says. He says, this book will bring you from the mode of passion and ignorance. Hands up if you're in the mode of passion and ignorance. Acha, TK. Okay. Passion and Ignorance Club, key. International Society for Passion and Ignorance, key. Yeah, that's us. So we're in passion and ignorance. That's basically what we are. And he says, this book will bring you to the mode of goodness. Right? Especially if you follow those first three verses of the Nectar of Instruction. For the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, they are the basis of our sadhana. Right? Those first three verses. Right? Control your mind, your anger, your speech, your tongue, your belly, and your genitals. Right? First verse. Rupa Goswami says, do this. Then we'll talk. Don't talk about Radha Krishna. Everyone's all Radha Krishna, Radha Krishna. 10th canto, right? No. Let's talk first. Are you doing this first? Okay. That's mode of goodness. Mode of goodness means I have control of my senses. Control of my mind, and my speech, and my anger. Okay, now we can talk after that. Right? Second verse, what does he say? Right? Yeah, these things are negative. These things will impede you. Don't eat too much, don't eat too little. Don't overcollect. Achaha, priyashas, right? Loyam, don't be greedy. And of all of them, what is the most important of the six? Right? Janasangha. Yeah, don't associate with materialistic people. You have to associate with materialistic people, because otherwise we can't spread the movement. But be very careful how you associate with the material people, right? Bring them onto our turf. Right? If we go out there to do a program, it's our program. No? When you're strong, you can do anything. Lord Nityananda Prabhu would walk into the brothels. Walking down the street, sees the brothel, just walks in. Right? And then everyone chant. Right? That's Nityananda Prabhu. Right? But maybe you're not ready for that. Maybe you are. Maybe you are. Maybe you can walk in. You can preach. He was. But the point is, he was powerful. You have to know how powerful you are. I remember one time I was, long time ago, it was like 25 years ago, we used to sell t-shirts to maintain the temple. So we were selling t-shirts, and I was in a factory area, and I walked into one, house in the middle of the factory, and I thought, that's strange, there's a house in the middle of the factory. I went, why'd you have a house? I walk in there, and then they said, the girls, they'll be out soon, just sit down. I was just a young boy, so I was like, the girls will be out soon, what are they doing? So I sat down, and then I'm just waiting there with my t-shirts, and then one of the girls walks out with a dressing gown on. Yeah, and then I thought, oh, acha, okay. Now I know where I am. I'm in a brothel, like that. So then I stood up, you know, and I said to the girl, I showed her the T-shirts. So I tried to sell her the T-shirt. And then, you know, the girls kept coming out every 5 minutes. Next girl, next girl. And they all started buying the T-shirts. But I had to know how much I could handle. If it was too much for me, then I have to walk out. But if I can stay there and I can engage them in Krishna service, then stay there and do it. So you have to know how much you can take. And then the third verse says, what is favorable? What's that? Yeah, these things you must have. Right? And of the six, what is the most significant?
Association.
Yeah. You have to associate with pure souls, elevated souls, who are attached to chanting the holy name of Krishna. That is the secret of success in spiritual life. So Prabhupada says the beginning, and he says in the introduction, that this book just brings you to the mode of goodness. Because if you don't get to the mode of goodness, then you cannot elevate to the mode of pure goodness. Therefore, you have to follow these things. It is important. The Bhagavatam itself instructs us, we must come to the mode of goodness first, then you will transcend. So when you read the last six chapters of the Gita, Krishna is, you know, I studied it very deeply a while ago. My understanding, what Krishna is teaching us, we must practice devotional service from the platform of the mode of goodness. And if you read Kapila's teachings in the third canto, right, chapters, I think, 25, 26, he says there is bhakti in the mode of ignorance, bhakti in the mode of passion, and bhakti in the mode of goodness. So bhakti itself, our service itself, that is transcendental. But the performer is not transcendental, and sometimes we become confused. We think we are transcendental because the service is transcendental. Yes, the service is transcendental. Yes, Krishna is transcendental, but we are not. And my Guru Maharaj, he said, I was listening to a lecture in 1996, and he changed my life. That's when I knew I had to get married. Yeah, because I was hearing this lecture. And when he said this one line, it just opened everything up for me. He said, unless you understand you are in the material world, you cannot get out of the material world. In other words, unless you identify your material desires, right, and fulfill them in a regulated way, you cannot transcend this material energy. It's not possible. So therefore, in order to become out of this material world, we have to understand where we are situated. So Kapila Dev, you know, in the 1 or 2 years' time when we get to the later part of the third canto, he says, devotional service in the mode of ignorance. What is the primary quality when someone's in the mode of ignorance doing devotional service?
Anger.
Anger, yeah. And the principal thing he says is separatist mentality. Can't work with the other devotees. You see, sometimes like that, you get a devotee, just can't work with anyone else. Tamagun. Angry, gets angry all the time. Right? He's making advancement, but you won't go back to Godhead. What are you going to do when you get back to the spiritual world? No, I can't work with all the gopis. No. I'll make the garlands by myself. You do the rust dance over there. Yeah, I'm just going to play the veena over here. So what's that? Yeah, Krishna's going to say, who's that gopi over the back there? Oh, that's the separatist. And Krishna says, okay, back to the material world. That's why we're in the material world, because we want it to be separate from the group. That's why Lord Chaitanya says, gopi bhatu pada kamala yo das, das, anodas. You have to be part of the group. But when you're part of the group, you can't be the main person in the group. We like to be the main person. That's our disease, pratishta. Right? We like to be the main person, but we can't be. In the spiritual world, the main person is Radha, right? Second in charge is Lalita. Third in charge is Vishakha, right? And where are we? Right? Rupa Goswami says there are 800,000 eternally liberated gopis. We're not even in the first 800,000. You know, when you get back to the spiritual world, they'll give you your number. Right? It says in the Rasa Lila there were 3 billion gopis. So what number are we when we get back? Right? We're not even in that 3 billion. We're probably like, we're the servants of the servants of the servants of, you know, so how do we? So you have to accept, if you want to get back to the spiritual world, right, you can't be the center. Mode of ignorance means I am. I'm a separatist. Then he says, devotional service in the mode of passion. What are the qualities?
Intense desire.
Yeah, agreed. Like that. And it's interesting, Kapila mentions the second time, he says separatist. He says in Tamaguna and Rajaguna, he mentions it both times. He said the Rajaguna devotee is a separatist as well. Because it's me, I've got to be number one. I am the biggest book distributor. I am the number one pot washer. I am. Prabhupada said, if you say, I want, that is sense gratification. Right? And, you know, a lot of the time we're very humble externally. You know, we go around to everyone, oh, Prabhuji. Right? We're very good at this, you know. But inside, no, it's not like that at all. Inside, it's just all. It's pratishtha. Right? It says in English, there is an old saying, that pride often borrows the cloak of humility. Inside it's all pride, but outside it's like we wear this cloak. We're, you know, we're going, Harry Bopper, would you? But inside it's a totally different thing going on. So, and Krishna knows. You think Krishna knows the difference? Right? You're trying to fool him? You come before him like you? Right? Just like one time, there's one devotee one time. Prabhupada was walking, he'd go for morning walk in Vrindavan, he'd come back, and he'd walk in the gate, and every morning he'd walk in the gate, and devotee was on the side chanting prayers in Sanskrit. We have met your grace by the will of providence. You know, chanting all the... So Prabhupada just walked past. You know, next morning, you know, devotee's chanting, Prabhupada walks, he just looks at him, just keeps walking. Third morning, Prabhupada stopped, put his cane down, right? He said, there is garbage there on the ground, pick it up. And devotee is shot. Now the Prabhupada said, do something. Do something for Krishna. That's humility. Humility is not like, oh. No, do something for Krishna. That's humility. Right? You walk in the temple, you see something on the ground. You know, you walk in the temple in the middle of the day, no one's around, and someone's left mats everywhere. You pick up the mats and you put them away. Seva abhiman. A devotee has a service mentality. That's what attracts Krishna. Mode of passion means, you know, I have to be number one, recognized all the time by the devotees. So Lord Kapila and Lord Krishna, they favor devotional service in the mode of goodness. Mode of goodness means you have the right qualities, and from that platform, you can then advance. Prabhupada is like a springboard to pure goodness. So we have to cultivate the right qualities. And how do we cultivate the mode of goodness? What is the first way of doing it? On a practical level?
Regulation.
Yeah, very good. Regulation. Yeah, very good. It means getting up early in the morning. When is Sattvagun prominent? Right? Before the sun rises. That's when Sattvagun is most prominent. It's called Brahma Muhurta. Right? As soon as the sun rises, you see everyone starts getting active. Right? It's like right now. A big traffic jam on the Westgate Bridge. Yeah, because everyone's active. I've got to do it. Mode of passion. And that's what the whole world's about. Passion. Prabhupada was in a traffic jam one time, somewhere in the world, he was in a traffic jam. Prabhupada just said, sex desire. That's what the whole world, it's just all that traffic jam is just one thing. Kama Asia, Krodha Asia, Rajaguna Samud Baba. Right? It is mode of passion. Lust is born from passion. That's what keeps the whole world. You take sex desire out of this world, the whole thing just, that traffic jam will stop. Right? Everyone will just get out of the car, leave the keys there, jump off the Westgate Bridge. You can't anymore because they put the fence up. You know why they put the fence up there? On the Westgate Bridge? Because so many people were jumping off. That cost them millions of dollars to put that big fence up on the side of the bridge. So many people were jumping off. You know, it was like 20 people a month or something were jumping off. It wasn't in the news, but it was just like people just, you know, it wasn't safe to put the boats under the bridge anymore. It's like every time the boat went past or something, because it's mode of passion. Mode of passion leads to mode of passion, because most of us are in the mode of passion. Mode of passion can only go two ways, because it's very strong. If you control it, you can rise it to the mode of goodness, or if you don't control it, it will just take you into ignorance. And that's what happens with most people. You just work hard all week, work hard all week, work hard all week. When the weekend comes, I'm so tired, I just sleep. So we have to live in the mode of goodness. That's how we progress. So Krishna is analyzing this. So this whole section of the Bhagavad Gita is going to teach us about creation, how to understand how this material energy works. If you don't understand how this material energy works, you can't get out of it. So we have to understand. We have to analyze and study. That's why we have to come to the Bhagavad Gita class. So we'll stop here. We'll see if there are any questions or comments on what we discussed.
There is something about the potency of Supreme Personality.
The potency of the Supreme Personality. I didn't get into that. That's a whole other like subject like that. But the potency means his. It says in the prayers of the personified Vedas in the 10th canto, or the Krishna book. If you read the Krishna book, Prabhupada's commentary, one of the last chapters is prayers of the personified Vedas. Prabhupada says there that Krishna is so powerful that every moment his energies are expanding. And then when he understands in that moment how powerful he is, the next moment he's more powerful. So Prabhupada says, it's not right to say that God does not know himself, but every time he does know himself, he realizes I'm more powerful than what I thought. And then he realizes that, and then he thinks, no, I'm more powerful. So it's just he's unlimitedly powerful. So that's what it means. Yeah, that's okay. That's okay. Be attached to the devotees, that's okay. Because the devotees will take you back to Godhead. So you have to be attached to the devotees, that's okay. Because Ramananda Roy says, the most difficult thing in this world is to live without devotees. No? So if you don't have devotees, it's very difficult. So we need the devotees. Yeah, that's the greatest pain. Yeah, we know. That is the greatest pain. There's nothing more painful than that. So therefore, it's right. And then Ambarish Maharaj, in the 9th canto of the Bhagavad Gita, when he's describing how to use our senses in the service of Krishna, when you use your tactile sense or the sense of touch, then what does Ambarish Maharaj, what is the teaching?
Touching the
bodies of the devotees. Right? So to purify your sense of touch, right, you massage the devotee's body. Not that. That's purification. So we all come, we all massage each other's body. Not that. Not in front of the deities. But yeah, we have to massage, we have to touch the other devotee's body. So you get purified by serving the Vaishnavas. Purified. Vapu Seva and Vani Seva. Right? Vani Seva, we say, is more important. But every opportunity you get, you do Vapu Seva. Right? Because Vapu Seva makes you attached to the Vani. Right? Don't neglect the Vapu Seva. Sometimes my Guru Maharaj used to say this, because he had a lot of association with Prabhupada. And Prabhupada always said, Vani Seva is more important. But my Guru Maharaj said, he said, you cannot replace Vapu Seva. And you're just being with the Guru. Not just being with him, but serving the Guru. Or serving the devotees. So every opportunity, do some Seva. So yeah, to be attached to devotees, that's the perfection of life. That's no problem. But don't become attached to devotees in a material way. Like that. What is that? Yeah, yeah. In other words, don't try to get the devotees to serve you. But you serve the devotees. Even if you're the senior devotee, because when you're senior, the devotees want to serve you. Right? But you always have to be in the mode that I am serving them. Helping them become Krishna conscious. So, yeah.
You were speaking about the modes and the traffic jam, that's because the mode of passion is prevalent. I was wondering if you could say something about engaging the modes for the devotee. Because when we look at the universe, and then the mode of passion is pushing us. But then we think, okay, there's people on the street. Right it.
service of Krishna.
Yeah, engaging and writing and engaging.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'll explain it. When Lord Brahma, when he created the material world, because there's the guna avatars, so Vishnu maintains everything, Shiva destroys it, and Brahma creates it. So when Brahma begins to create, because the mode of passion is very powerful, and of the three modes, it's the most prominent in this world, is passion. If you look at the world, it's passion. So when Brahma begins to create, he prays to the Lord, please don't let me become overcome by this mode. So as you said, we engage the mode, because we need activity. Right? Prabhupada said the goal of this movement is to go to Mayapur and chant 24 hours a day. Hands up anyone here who could do that right now. No, none of us, right? So Prabhupada said, I am creating all these big, big projects just to keep you engaged. Right? So you travel the world, right? Just chanting all over the streets of the world, right? Because you need to engage your passion. You have a lot of passion, a lot of energy. But we should not become overcome by that passion. The mode of goodness should always be prominent. Just like before, we're dancing in the kirtan, but sometimes the boys are getting a little bit too far. Because when it's mode of goodness, or it's more transcendental, it's for the pleasure of the deities. And the mantra is always the center. But sometimes when the acrobatics overtake the mantra, right? We have to be careful of that, because it means the modes are beginning to overtake the actual transcendental. So we engage this in Krishna's service, but you don't let it overcome you, right? Which is difficult, because even Lord Brahma said, protect me, like that. So just be conscious of it. Is that okay?
Yourself is different than us, your movement is different, but we see you, we are part of one thing, you're differentiating yourself from us. So, you know, this is apparently more of goodness because they see that, you know, that we're all one family. Apparently, that's how they see. But in their eyes, we look like we're separatists, we're on a lower level. So, how do we understand? Why devotees appear to be like this sometimes, although they're accepting Krishna as the Lord, but still they appear to be separatists.
But they're not accepting Krishna as the Lord. You mean like all the yoga groups that we go and associate with and all these people? Yeah. Yeah, it's difficult. That kind of preaching is difficult. Just like we have the Satchinandan yoga group, they're huge. And they have an ashram about 2 hours from here. And they invite Sri Prahlad and all the devotees to come do the kirtan. They have big kirtan mailers, but they're impersonalists. And they stopped inviting us to come because we used to go there and they have like their routine. But we always kept a bit separate. We kind of went into their sangha. But even though we're in there, and they noticed that. And it is difficult to preach because, you know, you don't want to offside everyone. You want to keep the mood nice. But at the same time, we are different. We have a different goal. Our prayojana is different. So, you know, the Abhideya, or the process, we all chant the Maha Mantra, but they're chanting, they're just like, you know what they're thinking. But we're very different in what we're thinking. So it's a difficult thing to navigate.
So it looks like we're in a more of passion being separate, but actually it's not that. It can be something else, actually.
Yeah, it's a transcendental motivation. And it's hard to, because, you know, Prabhupada himself, there was one time, because we know what Prabhupada was like, plus he was 70, he was old. Like when Mahaprabhu says something to you, you just take it because he's older. He just says, you know, you're a rascal, you're like that. We say, you know, like that. But, you know, if you or I say, you know, to each other, we're, you rascal, this, like that, we say, you know, what are you saying? You know? So Prabhupada, he would sometimes speak like that. He went one time in India, he was invited to like a a group, Harisari Prabhu tells in his diary, and they were trying to make Bhagavad Gita prominent in India. So they had this big meeting, and some of them were prominent, like yogis and like this. So Prabhupada came in later. They invited him to come at the end, probably because they knew what he was going to say. So he came in late, and they were all sitting there, and they were like, and he was the most prominent because his Gita was the most successful. And they said, you know, what do you think? You know, and Prabhupada just smashed them. You know, they're all trying. They're all like, you know, lovey, like, you know, it's all, we're all the same, and it's all beautiful. And Prabhupada walked in and said, "You will never be successful." Yeah, just straight on their face. You know, Prabhupada would say, "A kick on your face. What do you do?" Yeah, and he walked in. He said, "You will never be successful." Yeah, and everyone's like, you know, like that. And then one young person started challenging Prabhupada, right? And Prabhupada just shut them down. He said, "What do you know? You know, have you taken the Gita around the world?" Like, you know, shut them down. Man. So, you know, Harisari Prabhu was there and some other disciple there, and they're just like, you know, oh. Yeah, Prabhupada would do this all the time, just walk into place and just start spouting there, like, oh my God. You know, and then, but then Prabhupada at the end, because he saw that what was taking place, because Prabhupada was very intelligent, he was very socially gifted. When he saw it, then so he changed the whole mood again. And then he made it all light, and he started joking with everyone. He just took it off the philosophy, and he just made friends. And when he left, like, everyone was kind of light and nice. So it's difficult to navigate. You go to these programs, because we are what we are. We do believe what we do believe. What they believe is it's very unclear. Yeah, if you actually speak to them, they actually don't know what they believe. You know, they're just there because it's all beautiful, and, you know, it just makes them feel a bit peaceful. So that's good. But they don't actually understand what it's all about. So we do keep ourselves separate, but at the same time we have to be there and we have to be nice, so it's hard. It's difficult. You know, Sri Prahlada, he's very expert in dealing with non-devotees, but even with, they noticed that, you know, his group were different, and they, you know, to a degree they kind of haven't been inviting us as much as they used to. So it's difficult to navigate. So I can't give an answer. But it's just, you know, you have to be expert. A devotee is daksha. Means he just has to be expert.
What I got from you is that it may look for them that way, more passionate if we're trying to be a little
separate.
But actually, that is not more passionate because the motivation is we want to please Krishna. So if that is the motivation, then it's transcendental consciousness, but it looks like more passion to people who are not educated.
Yeah, I mean, you see, the way our movement preached in the 70s, it was very bold, because the founder of Tara was very bold. He used to say, Prabhupada would say radical things. He'd say, "We are all good and you are all bad." That's a heavy thing to say. We don't preach like that. Imagine going to one of those groups, you know, at the end of the kirtan. "We are all good, you are all bad." They'd never invite us again. You know, so we have to be very careful. But now the way we preach these days, we're very conscientious of how others think of us. Very conscientious. Even sometimes maybe too conscientious. But we just have to be very, you know, because how, as you said, how they see us and how we are, they don't understand us. A non-devotee cannot understand a devotee. They don't understand why we like this, like that. Because they don't understand what's driving us, what is the consciousness. Any other question?
One time, Prabhupada, one person asked how many pure devotees are there in the world. Prabhupada said, "How many devotees are in this spot?" And he said, "That many pure devotees are there." And can you explain why he said that? Because you also said that we're Vaishnava bhakts, but Prabhupada is saying that all the devotees
we're pure devotees, yeah. Because Prabhupada said the mango, he gave the example when he said that. He said a ripe mango and an unripe mango. So we're unripe mangoes, but we are mangoes. So it means we will become ripe. So when Prabhupada was looking at us, he knew it was just a matter of time before we became pure devotees. And the point is we're on the path of pure devotion. Right? You know, Rupa Goswami, how does he define pure devotion? Anyabhilashita shunyam, gana kyamadya navritam. So by Rupa Goswami's definition, we have material desires in our heart. Hands up if you have material desires in your heart. You don't have to be that enthusiastic. That's good. Okay. Yeah, we do. We have material desires in our heart, right? But Rupa Goswami says, if you do not act on them, In other words, if we follow the four regulative principles, if we don't act on the material desires, even though we have the desire in our heart, but we don't act on it, he said that is pure devotional service. And that will lead you to pure devotional service. But, you know, we have material desires. We have the desire to break the principles. But we don't do it because we're trying to get to Krishna. We're sacrificing. And as time goes by, we lose the attraction to the material energy. So that's why Prabhupada said. Any other question? Comment?
Someone asked me this question a couple of days ago about how this statement by Srila Prabhupada, that milk touched by the lips of a serpent becomes poisonous and regarded through Maha Mantra being chanted by impersonals. So but we should hear it from a pure devotee. And I've also heard that even if you chant the syllables of Hari in separate words, like you say Ha and you say Ri in separate words, and there's so much benefit there. So how do we understand these two?
Yeah, because if it's touched by the lips of a non-devotee, they chant, like if you go to these kirtan melas, they're all Mayavadis. They're impersonal. They're just yoga schools and yoga groups, but they're all chanting the Maha Mantra. But they don't have the sambandha or the correct understanding of what they're doing and who God is. But they're getting benefit. The benefit is there. But then afterwards, if the yoga teacher or whatever starts giving a Mayavada interpretation, then that's milk touched by the lips of a serpent. Because now everyone's got the wrong... But we go, we can be part of that same kirtan, and even the Mayavadi might be leading the kirtan, but we're chanting the Maha Mantra with the right understanding, right? Then, for us it is milk, it's not poison. But we have to be careful. You have to be careful, because then, you know, in due course of time you might become affected by their philosophy or their preaching. So you have to be careful.
So in Prabhupada says chanting, he means not just the singing of the mantra, but the philosophy that would be explained by the person who's singing.
Yeah, it's the sambandha. And Satchinandan Swami teaches this in all of his japa retreats, his holy name retreats. You have to chant with sambandha, relationship with Krishna. Right? So when you understand what it is you're doing, who you're chanting, who the personality is, it says that when you get to the platform of nishta, you know, there's an anatta nivritti, we go through the nine sets. When you get to nishta, then when you chant the nama, rupa, guna, lila, the rupa at the platform of nishta, it amalgamates with the holy name. So whenever you say Krishna, you see the form of Krishna in your mind. You know, that means you're advancing in your chanting. That's what you should be doing right now. You're chanting a japa, right? Nama, rupa, guna, lila, it should be coming. Prabhupada said, you know, we always say, just chant. Just hear, Prabhupada said that. But he says other things as well. Prabhupada says that when you chant, the transcendental pastimes of Krishna should be running through your mind like a river. He says these things. Yeah. Hear the pastimes. Yeah. So this will order. Prabhupada said don't artificially do it, but it will come naturally as you advance.
So if we're hearing someone chanting, but we don't hear from them, then the effect of consciously, if someone is chanting Hare Krishna, but they have wrong sambandha in their consciousness and their meditation.
Yeah.
Does that vibration affect us?
No, because you respond. Because if someone, like a non-devotee, you're walking down the street, a non-devotee says, Krishna. You know? What do you think of? You think of Krishna. So you're transcendental. They're not. So you're with a whole bunch of Mayavadis. They're all going, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. They're off with the fairies. They don't even know what they're saying, what they're doing. They're just like in this impersonalistic, I don't even know what they're in. But the point is, they're getting purified because Krishna is there in the form of the holy name. And you're totally on a different platform altogether. But if the opportunity is there, if we go to those places, we should chant. Not they should chant, we should chant. And they always say that, you know, whenever you go to these kirtan things, they always say, oh, the Haris are the best. They always say that. So, I mean, we went to one confest. It's like this this hippie festival. And after we did kirtan, it was really nice kirtan, we were all very fired up. And after the kirtan, they came up to us and they said, you guys are the best kirtan. You know, we go to kirtan everywhere, but you guys are the best because we're different. When we chant, it's different. Their chanting is just like, you know.
When we chant, there's something. Like they came on Janmashtami a few years ago. These other kind of yogi people came, and we were all chanting, and it was Janmashtami, so it was very deep. And being serving the deities all day, you know, and we're chanting in the kirtan, like we're tasting. You know, we're looking, devotees looking at each other. It was, you know, like we weren't serious, but we're deep, you know. And they were kind of looking at us very, you know, every time they caught our eye, they were kind of like, you know. I just looked at them like, what's going on, you know? Like, chant from here. Not like, you know, oh, that's so good. Yeah, and then go home and have your joint, and, you know, it's like, what's going on? You know, so chant from here, this is the point. And Aindra Prabhu, there's one book by Danodar Swami, and he's interviewing different devotees about chanting. And when he came to Aindra Prabhu, Aindra Prabhu is a great, you know, Mahatma in chanting. Aindra Prabhu said, chant from here. Said, chant from here. Right? And he said, you know, they said, what is the purpose of chanting? He said, one thing. He said, Krishna is a cowherd boy. He didn't say very much. Yeah, if you read what he says, only like one paragraph. He basically just says, Krishna is a cowherd boy. Chant like that. Yeah, from here, Krishna is a cowherd boy. And that's it. Right? Now what? How long will that take you to get to that point? Maybe years. But that's what you're aiming for. So understand it. You know, when you're going down the streets and you're jumping off all the seats and doing your whirlies, you know, down in Bourke Street Mall. But in your heart, you should be thinking of the cowherd boy. You know, not like I'm like the acharya of, you know, photographs, you know, mid-air flight photographs from international scenes around the world. I see it all. I see it all. But what's in here? What's in here? Ripe mango, unripe mango. Ripe mango means it's like, you know, it's all like that. Unripe mango. But when it's ripe, then it's from here. Still, you might be doing this. But in here, it's like Krishna. That's it. The mantra is always the center. The mantra is always the... In the kirtan, the mantra is not the center. Sometimes the devotees are going wild, but they're not chanting anymore. So then, what is that? Even today, you know, near the end, the mantra, I heard, because the volume of the mantra went down, because everyone was getting a bit too wild. No problem. If you want to get wild, that's no problem. If it's naturally coming, no problem. But if the mantra is going down, that means something's not connecting. It means the sambandha is getting lost. That's right. Because why are we doing it? We're doing it for them. We're not doing it for us. You imagine what they're thinking half the time. They must be just looking at each other just like that. One time Prabhupada said to the devotee, he said, Narad Muni was there. Yeah, in London. Yeah. So, you know, and Jyoti said, what was Narada doing? Prabhupada. You know, Prabhupada said, Narada was there at the kirtan. They said, what was he doing? Prabhupada said, he was laughing. He said, they are such Kali Yuga devotees. Any other question? Comment? Srila Prabhupada ki?